Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, online kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Lots to talk about today. There's a shooting at Ohio State University. We see these too often. We'll have some details about that coming up here in just a bit. Also, the big news over the weekend, Fidel Castro has died. And now the revisionists are talking about what a great guy he was. I don't know. We'll look into that. I don't think he was. That and more on this Monday edition of Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today with me as well after the weekend and looking refreshed and wonderful as always. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Well, there's bad news to start the day. Active shooter going on at Ohio State University campus. Of course, Trumpet Radio Live is live now, but it does replay, and some people listen on SoundCloud. So by the time you hear it, if you're not listening live, that'll be old news, I suppose. But it is an ongoing situation right now. Latest reports, 9 people or so taken to the hospital. The suspect currently surrounded in a parking garage, so they don't really know much more than that.
Yeah, and it kind of just goes to show you that maybe these institutions are not providing enough hope to their students. If something like this is happening, it seems to happen at universities and different schools more than any place else. And why would that be if the education was right?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what the deal was. And of course, not a lot of details yet, but it's interesting they send out texts to the students when there's a problem like this. And the text said this: Buckeye alert, active shooter on campus, run, hide, fight. And then they gave the location of the shooting. So, you wouldn't want to get a text like that, huh?
No, not at all.
So they told the students and all the faculty to shelter in place, stay put, and wait to see what happens. But the latest reports are that the shooters, whoever, they don't have the details yet. They're all kind of surrounded in this particular parking garage. But 9 people so far taken to the hospital, 8 or 9, maybe somebody was treated on the scene. It's kind of a evolving situation. They're not giving out details about how the people are doing. I did hear 2 are in stable condition, didn't hear about the rest. So just one of those crazy things. This happens too often. Let the gun debates begin, right?
Yeah, that's usually what happens, is it becomes a debate on taking away the guns, as if that person who shot up Ohio State is going to give away his gun if the government tells him to. I would actually guess it would be the exact opposite, that all the other students might turn in their guns, but he wouldn't.
There was one report, and again, it's kind of hearsay, you know, until they get all the details, but somebody that was around that area said that they saw one of the campus security officers. He's not a police officer, but he's a security officer down on the ground, like he had been shot. I don't know if they carry weapons. I don't know anything about that. But so apparently there was a little bit of an issue there with at least campus security. And now, of course, you can look on any of the websites, and they've got the pictures of all the police are there now, the ambulances. So it's quite a scene there at Ohio State. So right after the Thanksgiving break, and they're right back at it, and all this happens.
Yeah, and it really is like everyone else is at the shooter's mercy, and that's kind of how these situations go. Unless everyone else is packing heat as well, then the shooter can get away with it a lot of the time.
Yeah, so
at least for a while.
Right. There'll be more details about that coming up throughout the day, and he will keep you updated here at kpcg.fm as well. So bad situation there. Today is Cyber Monday, by the way, for those that want to spend all kinds of money. You can apparently get some deals. I don't know. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. It seems like all the real deals come later in the year where they have to unload all the merchandise nobody bought.
Mm-hmm.
So Don't tease me with 20 or 30%. I want 80%. 80% off. Then we'll start to think about it.
I want it for free.
Yeah.
When you've thrown it in the dumpster already, I'll go get it from there.
100% off. Yeah, my son didn't understand the percentage off issue at a store a while ago because I think it was like 50% off and then an additional 50% off. He's like, it's free, right? I'm like, no, you got to take half off the half off. It's not.
So 75% off. Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't quite sure on what it was, but
that is really confusing.
That would be a good deal. Yeah, that would be a good deal. But you don't find deals that good too often. Some of the big news over the weekend, of course, is Fidel Castro died. We're going to have more about that throughout the show, later on especially. But, of course, the Black Lives Matter had to chime in. This is from Heat Street. Black Lives Matter salutes Fidel Castro. They are, quote, grateful he harbored an FBI most wanted terrorist. Does this surprise you at all?
No.
Not surprised. Amazing. It's just amazing that this is happening. And they say this. The Black Lives Matter movement has come out in support of Fidel Castro following his death on Friday, saying they must, quote, come to the defense of El Comandante, and thanking him for safeguarding Assata Shakur, who's on the FBI's most wanted terrorist lists. The movement penned an article on Sunday titled Lessons from Fidel, Black Lives Matter and the Transition of El Comandante, on the Medium platform where they eulogize the passing of the Cuban dictator. The article, which was not bylined, was tweeted out by the closest thing that there is to an official Black Lives Matter account and also posted on the movement's semi-official Facebook page. So I guess it's kind of hard to pin down who's officially making statements, but this seems to be as official as they can get. The article claims Castro's death has caused an overwhelming sense of loss, complicated by fear and anxiety. I feel fine.
Yeah, exactly. No one should be too sad about that instance, but that cop killer that he was housing for all those years, that would make Cuba a direct enemy of the United States to do something like that, among many other reasons that Cuba is an enemy of this country, and yet Black Lives Matter is all for the enemy of the U.S., possibly meaning that maybe they're anti-U.S., so it just kind of is not a good connection for them to have.
No, but it's really interesting because they're kind of coming at this from the standpoint that there was some sort of racial harmony in Cuba. There is not, by the way. There's this write-up that I found from Mediate.com. And there's a man writing who is a Cuban-American. He says, as a Cuban-American myself, and what he's doing here basically is he's listing out all the political prisoners in Cuba, and all of them that he highlights are black people that were trying to get some sort of equality, and they got imprisoned. He says, as a Cuban-American myself, I am privy to firsthand accounts of many I meet who have recently escaped to the United States. They've escaped to the United States. Why? I thought Cuba was great. All live in the socialist dream. They escape to the United States.
How would these Black Lives Matter activists, the superior intellectuals of our time, feel about living there, down there in Cuba?
Well, if you could live with Fidel Castro in one of his many mansions, that would be probably a great deal.
You have to be on the right side of it because the rest of the people are suffering while he has unbound riches at his disposal.
The other 99.9% that are living off of the government food book that they would hand out and you could go get your ration, that wouldn't be so good. But he said, I met many that have escaped to the United States. Racism, they say, in Cuba is widespread and expected, and state posts, government jobs, or positions in the tourism industry are often allocated on the basis of skin color. He says, take a look at the top office holders in Cuba. You see any black faces there?
No.
No, you don't. So to come out and for Black Lives Matter to say, oh, you know, so sad that Fidel Castro has died. He wasn't your buddy.
No.
He didn't. He wasn't your friend.
I wonder when they will actually realize that they're just pawns in this game and that they are being controlled by much greater powers that have a lot more understanding than they do.
Yeah, it's pretty ignorant. This author, he quotes this other fellow, Roberto Zurbano. He wrote a piece in the New York Times just a while ago. And again, he's a black man that is in Cuba or was in Cuba. It says, the reality is that in Cuba, your experience of the changes, talking about the revolution in Cuba, depends on your skin color. Black Cubans have less property and money. They also have to contend with pervasive racism. Not long ago, it was common for hotel managers, for example, to hire only white staff members because they didn't want to offend the sensibilities of their European clientele. So a lot of the tourism there, or the tourism was one of the big industries. You couldn't get into that industry depending on your skin color, at least according to this guy. Whether that's exactly true or not, I don't know. But my point is, for Black Lives Matter to come out and say Castro was great, the people that lived there said he was not, that were black.
It's almost like their whole goal, Black Lives Matter's whole goal, is to have a viewpoint that is opposite of the majority of Americans. So most people here would not have a high view of Castro, so therefore they're going to have a very high view of him. Otherwise, what's their reason? They have no reason to think that he is some friend of the blacks.
Yeah, they just have a common enemy, which is the U.S., I guess. It was interesting. We talked the other day about Colin Kaepernick and his love of Fidel Castro. He went and played down in Miami over the weekend. He about got booed out of the stadium.
I heard about
and, that. And he got sacked and intercepted by a player in the Dolphins who is Cuban ancestry. And they talked to him after the game and his father. And his father actually, I think, lived in Cuba for a while. And they said Kaepernick's ignorant. They said he doesn't know what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
The dad said, I was there. I lived there. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I thought that was great.
Yeah, can Kaepernick even imagine the fact that people have come over here on rafts across a large stretch of the sea just to avoid living in that country anymore? That never happens here. There's no one fleeing on rafts to get out of America. Much less, you know, going up to Canada, which does not take such a treacherous path. I mean, it's just no one is leaving. Even all the people who promised they'd leave after Mr. Trump won the election, no one's leaving. And I thought this was the most racist country in the world now that a certain man won the presidency. Apparently not.
Well, the thing that's interesting they talk about with, say, Cuba and their idea of not having racism, they said a lot of the people that lived there said, look, they just ignored it and said it doesn't exist. Stop talking about it. And that was the solution to their problem. So does it exist? No, because we said it doesn't. But it still did. But that's the line, and people have bought into it, I guess.
Yeah, in a way, it would be nice if we could all do that here, where there's less racism than anywhere in the world. Maybe we should stop talking about it here, but not in Cuba, where it actually is a problem.
They must just really like those cigars, the Cuban cigars. Yeah, those are always the famous.
It's a great equalizer.
The Cubans, yeah, the Cuban cigars. So we got more information about Fidel Castro's death coming up a little later on, and a few details about his life. Wasn't too bad for him. If you can be at the head of the revolution, it's not too bad. If you have to be everyone under it, it's bad.
Right. But and he had people hopelessly enslaved to him the entire time that they lived there, and unless they escaped on a raft somehow.
Right. Yeah, not a good situation. Changing gears here dramatically. You ever considered... or wanted to live in a cardboard box?
I've thought that maybe that would be interesting.
For a short period of time.
Right.
Well, you can have your dream now. They're building houses out of cardboard, and only it's going to cost you $26,473.
Wow.
It's a nice box, though. They say, why build with traditional bricks and mortar? Well, you know, because it lasts. If they're looking for an answer.
Rhetorical question, I guess.
Rhetorical.
Don't answer that one.
When you can use something a little more unconventional, they say, that's the ethos behind one company in the Netherlands that uses cardboard to create their eco-friendly houses. They're called the Wickel House, W-I-K-K-E-L, meaning wrapped house in Dutch. I probably said that wrong, pronounced it wrong. produces houses wrapped in layer upon layer of cardboard. Homes are priced from starting at $26,473, excluding transportation and construction costs, so it could get up there a little more. Unlike traditional homes that are built from the ground up, a Wickel House is created in segments and assembled at the company's Amsterdam warehouse. To create each segment, corrugated cardboard is wrapped around a mold 24 times, not 23, not 25, 24 times. Layers are bonded with an environmentally friendly glue. In other words, one that probably won't stick. That seems to be the way it is. Like, this is an environmentally friendly product. I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't work, though.
Never mind that it's far less efficient than all the other products of its kind.
So they're going to glue it together for you. Of course, they say the key problem with any product made of cardboard is water. What happens with the water? To protect the house from the elements, the exterior is wrapped in a water-resistant, breathable foil. It's like you're a baked potato. They're putting you inside of this. They say it is then covered with wooden cladding while the inside is finished with plywood. They say no one really knows how long the houses will last. The company has guaranteed them for 15 years, but Schilling believes they'll last for 50 years or more. Well, we'll see. The key with the house, as with anything, is to maintain it. If you protect paper the right way, like antique books, they can last a long time. That's a really strange way to describe how to keep your house going. Like, you know, like antique books, just, you know.
Fragile as an antique book, yeah. But you're going to live inside of it.
I don't know. I mean, there's pictures of it. You can see it. It was from CNN.com. They had a link on it. I don't know. It would be like if it was a weekend getaway. It'd be like, hey, that's kind of cool. We stayed in the cardboard house, but to live in it, I don't think so.
Yeah, it does sound pretty well reinforced, though. 24 wraps and then foil on the outside. At least there's plywood on the inside to hold some things up. So not exclusively cardboard, at least, but you definitely would have your concerns there.
It's a risk, you know, to spend almost $30,000 and hope that it lasts for 15 years. I don't know.
Is there any sort of warranty, at least, if there isn't?
It doesn't last that long. They guarantee it for 15, so I don't know if they'll come out and rewrap it for you.
Oh, okay. So they will actually reimburse you
something.
Or fix you up if there's a problem?
They have a guarantee for 15 years. Okay. So I guess if you're, I don't know, if you're 80 and you don't think you're going to last that long, you want to live in the cardboard house, you know, maybe do it. But, yeah, it's interesting. Everyone's always looking for a cheaper housing option because houses are so expensive. You spend so much of your income on housing. So people are always looking for a cheaper way to do it. Well, they've only made 10. They put one on a they're mostly over there in Europe, but they put one on a rooftop in London and then one in Germany, I guess. Hmm. So, but there's only 10 that they've made, and they're making 10 more. So get in now while supplies last. Cyber Monday.
It seems like that would make it a lot more expensive, the fact that there are so few in existence right now, but...
Or that nobody wants them.
Yeah.
The demand is low.
Even in a place like here, though, where most houses are around 100,000, man, a quarter of that, and if it actually lasts, that actually could pay off, especially if you have a warranty for it.
Well, I'd be worried about the wind blowing it, because it's kind of rounded, and it's roll you right down the hill. You wake up on somebody else's property. Sorry about that. My cardboard house rolled into your yard. So who knows? Interesting. They have the tiny house trend as well. That's a thing where people are building really small homes. And I don't know. Maybe it would work. I could see it working if you were by yourself. Mm-hmm. If you have a family, it seems weird to me.
Yeah. Actually, for a while, I was looking at some of those tiny houses, and I thought, maybe, who knows if this might actually work out.
But, you know, they're expensive, though, too. I mean, if you do it yourself, they're not as bad. But they can be pretty expensive. $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. I'm like, That's a pretty good part of a real, actual, normal-sized house.
Exactly. Yeah, some of them can be pretty expensive. I saw some that were only like $5,000 or $10,000 as well, though. Maybe those didn't come with all the appliances hooked up already. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, there's different ideas out there. We should just get a shell like a turtle. You just go wherever you want. Do whatever you want. No problem.
Lie down in the road when we're tired.
Yeah. So here's a really poor decision that somebody made. The wife of a Putin aide over in Russia sparks outrage after Holocaust-themed ice dance. You don't ever, ever want to do anything that's Holocaust-themed unless it's an actual, like, Holocaust museum or something. An Olympic ice dancing gold medalist and her on-ice partner have caused controversy by dressing up in concentration camp uniforms for a dance routine on a popular television show in Russia, I guess. I've never heard of it, but... Tatiana Navka, who is the wife of Russian presidential spokesman Dmitry Peskov, and dancing partner Andrei Burkovsky appeared in Saturday's episode of Ice Age. It's like an ice dancing show, I guess, kind of like Dancing with the Stars. Here you ice dance with animals from the Ice Age, I guess. Maybe not. Maybe I'm misinterpreting that. But they do ice dancing. Anyway, they were dressed in striped uniforms bearing the yellow six-pointed stars and heavily made up to look bruised and frail. So they made them up to look like they had been in a bad situation. Their routine, which aired on state-owned Channel 1, was based on Life is Beautiful. That's the Academy Award-winning Italian movie about a Jewish father who pretends, for the sake of his small son, that their internment in a Nazi camp is just a game. So that was kind of a well-received movie. I guess they thought maybe people would like this. People did not like it. It was very offensive to most, which you can understand.
So it's patterned after a movie that people liked, but they didn't like the Ice performance.
Yeah.
I wonder what went wrong with the Ice performance that would have made them upset about that specifically.
Yeah, I guess it's probably just that it was out of context. Like in a movie, it's kind of a historical look at it, and you can kind of, I guess, take that for what it is. But taking that element and bringing it into like a fun TV show, I guess that's probably what irritated people. I don't know for sure, but they were not happy about it. Just seems like a bad idea. Like you shouldn't. That's a topic you shouldn't get into with ice dancing.
Yeah, because it's not like they were glorifying the Holocaust or saying it was a good thing necessarily. But there are a lot of touchy issues now that, especially something as serious as that, you don't necessarily want to get into.
Yeah. So anyway, it's kind of an interesting story, but it's interesting too because this lady that did it is very high. She's married to a very high ranking official. It was on state owned TV. I mean, they were okay with it, I guess. Yeah. Maybe they didn't know, but so who knows? I don't know if that says anything or not. I don't necessarily think it does, but just a poor choice, if nothing else.
Yeah, and it's not like you can just say that hatred for Jews died with the Holocaust. That's something that's a serious problem even today, and it's worldwide for some reason, and it's hard to figure out why exactly so many different people seem to hate the Jews, but you can't really do too much with that because it is still a clear and present problem.
Yeah. So they got some negative comments on their Twitter. I guess they have Twitter in Russia. Pretty ignorant comment on my part. Oh, really? They have Twitter over there?
They do censor a lot of things, but so is the Twitter CEO now. He's censoring a lot of different people.
Yeah. So they have their own shows. It's interesting to see what other countries do. You know, they have their own versions of a lot of the game shows we know, like Wheel of Fortune and other things like that. So it is funny when you see it from other countries. It's kind of the same, kind of different. I guess this is sort of a Dancing with the Stars take, Ice Age, but they made a mistake there with their theme. Of course, this next one's happening. This is from Japan. Japanese skating rink that froze 5,000 dead fish into the ice as an attraction for visitors has been forced to close after receiving a barrage of criticism. Amusement park Space World. I wonder why they have an ice skating rink at Space World. It seems like they should have something to do with... Well, there's a lot of ice in
Maybe
space.
Maybe it's Pluto-themed.
Pluto-themed. They're now melting the rink. Oh, that'd be gross. All the dead fish in there. Which could take about a week and will hold a memorial service for the fish.
Oh, come on.
People were upset. The rink in southwestern Japan opened on November 12th after 5,000 fish were frozen just under the surface of the ice as a decorative effect while customers skated above. What do you think? Would you like to do that? Skate above the dead fish?
It would be pretty cool. I mean, that makes it different than every other ice rink. And now I just feel like everyone's getting offended by everything. Like, even the Holocaust thing wasn't meant to be offensive. And, you know, people are going to get upset. But that, the fish thing, obviously that one is not worthy of getting upset about at all.
They say the concept was slammed as unethical, and the rink in the Japanese city was forced to close on Sunday, according to the Space World spokesman.
Did they kill the fish first?
No.
They're already dead.
They claim they were already dead. They said, we received critical voices saying it is not good to use creatures as a toy and that it is bad to let food go to waste. Social media was upset. They said it was sinful. This is not a personal but a social issue, they said. Anyway, they said the fish were already dead at the time of the purchase and were considered unfit to be sold in markets. Internally, we'd had discussions, they say, over the morality of the idea. And they said the intention was for customers to have fun while also learning about fish. So there's a picture of it you can find on the web. Just search for the Japanese fish rink.
So they were already dead. They couldn't be sold in markets, which means probably most people don't want to eat them.
Yeah.
And yet you can't use them for a constructive purpose other than, you know, instead of throwing them in the trash.
It's interesting. Yeah,
I don't know about that one. That one seems a little bit too sensitive. Maybe people are just too sensitive about that.
It could be. I could see people coming down on that issue in a variety of ways. I could see a lot of people saying, well, who cares? And then I could see others being really, really upset. You know, some people really, boy, the animal thing is really near and dear to their heart.
Yeah.
You know, anything like this. It seems like they didn't do anything necessarily wrong. It'd be weird. I don't know how I'd feel if I went ice skating. And well, first of all, I think, why am I ice skating? But
exactly.
But if I was, ice dancing out there, I would probably think, why are all these fish here? You know. And now, if it naturally occurred, I would have been cool, actually.
Yeah, definitely.
And sometimes that happens where animals get frozen. It's kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, not for them, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to look down, especially depending on what types of fish there were. But if there were a lot of different exotic fishes, some of them pretty large as well, that'd be interesting to look down and see a lot of those.
Can you imagine the people that work there? You get called in for the Monday meeting, and they're like, we're going to have to melt that rink down, and you guys are going to have to clean it up. Can you imagine that?
5,000 dead fish.
Yeah. The smell.
Oh.
Having to clean that place out.
Wow.
You know, making your minimum wage, whatever it is over there. Boy, that would not be fun.
Not at all.
That would be really, really. You know, it's interesting. There's different cultures where, I don't know, you see shows and they kind of stereotype like what it is like in a different culture. And when it comes to, like, say, Japan, you see different, like, shows where they make everything, like, they really like small things. Like, they like things, but like them smaller than normal. I don't know if that's true. It's just a stereotype I've seen. But I was at the mall a couple months ago, and I saw some people from Japan, whether they live here or they're actually from over there. I'm not sure. And they were walking, and they had a drink, and it was the smallest cup I've ever seen. And I thought, is it true?
Thimble.
Yeah, it was literally almost like that. It had a little straw. I thought, they were in the food. I thought, where did you get that? Like, it's so tiny. And I thought, maybe that's true.
It seems like it could be. Yeah.
Sometimes different stereotypes are true. There's always, I guess, a connotation that all stereotypes are bad. Not necessarily. Some are just kind of like, you know, you notice, hey, that group of people, they like to do that thing and, you know, whatever. So for me, you know, ice dancing, that's my, people look at me and they say, that's an ice dancer right there.
Well, that's the thing. The stereotypes seem to offend people pretty easily as well. And it's the same as with this fish story or with the other ice dancing story. We're just getting upset about everything now.
All kinds of things to be upset about. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show, that's coming up here in a bit on KPCG, along with the Key of David program as well. And the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with Stephen Fleury today. He's back. He took a couple-day break, and that's from Edstone, England. He talked today a lot about Fidel Castro. Of course, he died over the weekend. I guess it was Friday. And as is brought out on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, a lot of the media and many Western politicians are talking about Fidel Castro as if he were some sort of a great man, a revolutionary leader in some ways. But the facts say otherwise. That's not what was going on there in Cuba, and that's not the type of person that Fidel Castro was. But yet people don't want to critique him, which is strange. Yeah, he's very critiquable. Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of things that really the West should be upset about. He plays a really great clip from Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, where he, you know, comes out and kind of calls it for what it is in Cuba and says, hey, take a look at the life of the Cuban people since Fidel Castro came on board, and it's been far, far worse. So it's a really good program today, and it really brings balance to this whole Castro dying story.
Yeah, and he's openly hated the United States for decades. We almost had the Cuban Missile Crisis where he tried to be a launching pad for Russian missiles during the Cold War. So it just goes to show he's no friend of the U.S., and yet we have so many apologists in this country who like to, after the fact, glorify somebody.
There's an interesting write-up I saw in the New York Post. They said the title was Inside Fidel Castro's Life of Luxury and Ladies While Country Starved. And it's based on a book written by somebody that was in his security detail for, I think, 17 years. So, I mean, there could be some embellishment, but I would think most of it's probably accurate. And they just talk about a lot of the stuff that he was involved in. But one of the things that was interesting is they say Castro kept 20 luxurious properties throughout the nation, including his own island, accessed via a yacht decorated entirely in exotic wood imported from Angola. And that was just one of his properties. And he was living the life of luxury. I mean, the man was wealthy because he took it from the people. The people were, you know, in poverty.
Yeah, I mean, basically, he controlled the entire country's wealth, and with that, obviously, come a lot of different other immoral actions, like the luxury and ladies part of it as well.
Yeah, he had many, many situations from what they wrote about. So, really interesting to see his life, and you know, it's funny because he was never considered, you know, like some great person. until recently. I guess in some circles he has been, but it seems like it's the popular thing to say now. And it is always fascinating when somebody dies. They can have a track record of just doing the worst things ever, you know, murder or anything. And when they die, there'll always be somebody who says, well, you know, they're a pretty good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done some of the most heinous things. And people always say that. They're like, well, deep down they were pretty good, though. It's always fascinating to see that.
Yeah, it's just a really good study in mental gymnastics, basically, where you try to figure out how to paint someone in a totally different way than the way they actually were their entire lives. Like the woman who basically created abortion is looked on pretty fondly today, as well as Hillary Clinton even talked about a former KKK member who is her mentor, as if these types of people are really worthy of praise for what they've done.
Yeah, it's revisionist history for sure. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. And if you have any emails you'd like to send our way, please do so. Comments at kpcg.fm. We're always happy to take a look at those for you. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here, and Abraham Blondeau stopping by as well. And Abraham, you've got a write-up here from the National Review. Fidel Castro and dead utopianism. Utopianism. I don't know that I've ever said that word until right this moment.
Well, I'm
learning things.
Yeah, I'm glad I could introduce it to your vocabulary.
Thanks to Fidel Castro, the great dictator.
I'm guessing, I don't have the exact definition in front of me, but I'm guessing that's the idea of utopia, creating this perfect environment and world.
Yeah, basically that's a perfect society where there's no war. It's the ideal, I guess.
So they're saying, are they saying that he didn't do it? He tried, but he didn't do it?
Exactly. This is by George Will. And basically he's saying that he goes through and says any communist leader, socialist leader, they always try to create utopia. That's their political goal. They want to create a society where everyone shares everything. There's no war or conflict. It's all perfect.
It's always so funny when they say that, you know, everyone will share everything. I mean, I'm going to take most of it for me, but the rest of you, the 5% that I'm leaving, share it amongst yourselves evenly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing he points out, is that there's so much hypocrisy and there's so much just failure in that idea that there's really no there's no foundation for it. And that's why a lot of liberals like Fidel Castro, because socialists, they're always looking for an example in history where socialism worked. You can't look at Stalin's Russia. Stalin, when he became the power, said he was creating the perfect society. Well, you can talk to all the gulag victims who survived and see how perfect that was.
Well, maybe he needed to kill 30 million people to make it perfect. Maybe those people were standing in his way.
Well, people in the West said, well, you have to break a few eggs to make the omelet.
Oh, please.
Because there are always people in open societies who do support dictators, and because you're allowed to have your own ideologies, and we always have those type of people in America, Britain, in the West. And so that's why I think the left really loves Fidel Castro, because they think Cuba is a success story of socialism, and it's not true at all. But that's how they try to spin it, and that's really what they've been trying to do with his death, and trying to spin that Cuba has the highest literacy rate, or a very good one. They have a healthcare system. They try to spin all these positives that he had. But when
Fidel Castro got really sick, what did he do for his healthcare?
Went to America.
Oh, isn't that funny?
Yeah. What?
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's
well, I guess the queue, as they say, was so long there, and he had and everybody shares equally, so he probably just had to come to America.
So it's free, I guess, free there, but you have to wait forever to get your turn.
I don't really know how it works.
Yeah,
nobody knows how it works in Cuba. You know, they have their stance. You know, like what they say, but you know, like an article I read today about him, they said if you believe the narrative that Castro put out about himself, he lived in like some sort of a hut down by the beach, and he like barely, you know, he just ate like fish.
I've heard that.
Nobody even
that
knew
was true.
Nobody even knew where that guy lived. He had 20 luxury properties, including a private island.
Right.
And then he'd roll up in his either Adidas sweatsuit, which communist leaders always love for some reason. they must be supported by, must support that or something, and or his old rumpled up army uniform to try to look like he was the everyman. he was not.
Yeah, well, exactly, and that's what George Will points out here, is that all those arguments should die with Castro, because there's just so much proof that all that was lies, and that any type of leader like him just creates the worst kind of society for those who he rules over. And he goes through some, there are plenty of examples, but just going through just the prison and detention system, and how he would, anyone who disagreed with the regime would be thrown in jail as a political dissident. And one man, Armando Valderez, I hope I said his name right, he wrote a prison memoir called Against All Hope when he was imprisoned in Cuba. And he had to eat watery soup laced with glass, dead rats, or cow's intestines filled with feces. And that's what the Cuban guards feed to their prisoners in Cuba. So I don't think that's really utopia if you look at it. And as Grant mentioned earlier, that if you look outside of Cuba, Cuba's a small island. If you look at what Fidel Castro meant to the world, well, the biggest legacy he had was the Cuban Missile Crisis, where he almost caused Armageddon on the entire world because he invited the Soviets to put missiles there. And then Lee Harvey Oswald was a Fidel Castro worshiper, and he probably had a hand in, well, it looks like he had a hand in directly or indirectly with the assassination of President Kennedy. So, I mean, that's, if we're talking about someone who should be eulogized and just really supported in their death, that's not someone I would think should deserve it. And a lot of different writers have really been pointing out all the hypocrisy in the media and with a lot of people, what they're saying about Castro, and that's great. But as George Will points out here, is that socialism is bountiful only in slogans. And Castro's favorite was socialism or death. And he says here that Castro's death should make an end of the case for socialism. Because if you look at Cuba, there's nothing there to really glorify.
Well, that's why the way the media reports on it is so... Sorry, a little extra audio there that came through. The way the media reports on it is very important now after his death, because, again, people could look at it like, no, it was great, and if you don't know what actually happened there. One of the write-ups that I was reading this morning, somebody that was actually from, I think, from Cuba, or their family was, and they had some firsthand experience, and they were just, they couldn't believe that people would actually hold it up as some sort of paradise. And they said that's like praising Mussolini for keeping the trains running on time.
Right.
You know. So, yeah, you can always probably find one thing that was like, well, at least that worked, and then ignore everything else. And they're doing that with the literacy and all these other things, which, again, I know that's what they say, but I don't know. Has anybody gone down there to prove that? I mean, maybe it's true. I don't know. But even if it is, so what? But I doubt. I just doubt that that's true. But.
Yeah. Well, I think... nations who are experts in propaganda always have high literacy rates, because you need to teach your people your own version of the story, or else they'll turn against you. And I think even with the healthcare system, I read a story where most doctors have to moonlight as a taxi driver or something else just to make ends meet, because they don't make enough money being a doctor in Cuba.
They have to share their salary with everyone else.
Yeah, or it pays so poorly. Like, there's just no money to go around to anyone in Cuba because they're broke.
Well, and right, and that's one of the things about, say, being a doctor or something. It takes more schooling and it takes more skill. And so to put more effort into obtaining that skill, you want to pay off at the end. Mm-hmm. You should be rewarded for certain careers, because they are more difficult and they require more training. But when you take that away, you take that, why would anyone bother? You're gonna get not the best. That's for sure.
And if there's no incentive to be a good doctor, then why be a good doctor? And that's a pretty alarming thing to think about.
Yeah.
Well, I think the incentive is, if you don't do a good job, you won't be a doctor anymore.
You might not be anything anymore.
Yeah, exactly. In Cuba. But speaking of the media and how they've praised Castro, I just have a statement here from the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau. And I just think this is, of all the things I've read, I think this is the most shameful, I would think. And here's just a few excerpts of what he said. It is with deep sorrow that I learned today of the death of Cuba's longest-serving president. Fidel Castro was a larger-than-life leader who served his people for almost half a century. A legendary revolutionary and orator, Mr. Castro made significant improvements to the education and healthcare of his island nation. While a controversial figure, both Mr. Castro's supporters and detractors recognize his tremendous dedication and love for the Cuban people, who had a deep and lasting affection for El Comandante. And he goes on to say, my father knew him as a friend, and that's true. And this is his closing. On behalf of all Canadians, Sophie and I offer our deepest condolences to the family, friends, and many, many supporters of Mr. Castro. We join the people of Cuba today in mourning the loss of this remarkable leader. And I'll say to that that, Mr. Prime Minister, you don't speak for all Canadians, because I don't agree with you. And I just think that this is, it's shameful that someone, Canada, an ally of the United States, and someone who has personal connections to Castro and knows a little bit more, maybe, than other people about what goes on there, that he would have such such words, kind words to say for him. And especially in light of everything we talked about, it's just a little galling to have a leader of one of the major Western nations say something like this.
Well, yeah, and a lot of the people that escaped Cuba and are living like in Florida and such were rejoicing when he died.
Yeah. Little Havana was, they were dancing and
I thought it was
drinking.
Great.
Yeah.
It was a party. So I guess they had a different perspective.
We talk about that all the time with the liberals who have this grand vision of how things should be, and they'll overlook all the facts just to say that Cuba is the ideal example of a peacefully run country that has high literacy and all these other things. And they always ignore the people on the ground who are experiencing things far different than what their vision would tell them to believe.
And that's what was so good about the quote played on the Trumpet Daily radio show from President Reagan, was he wasn't yelling and full of all kinds of, animosity. He just laid the facts out like, well, look, because he was contradicting some of media reports. He said, some of the media have said such and such about Cuba. He's like, let's just look at the facts, okay? The people, their income has plummeted, because they were actually a pretty wealthy country, and they really were quite a good example before Castro. What did Castro really do? He took over, and he took all the money, and he became the king, and he just made everybody else, a serf in the kingdom. That's all he did. He took over and took everything. Well, yeah, that's good if you're him, but everybody else suffered under it. Why won't anyone say that? Not many.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think the thinking about the left loves him because of what we've been talking about. It tries to justify socialism, but I think another reason for it is that Fidel Castro is a symbol of American failure. Because, America liberated Cuba from the Spaniards in 1898, the Spanish-America War. Teddy Roosevelt led the charge up San Juan Hill in Cuba. And then when Castro took power, the United States tried to get rid of him. Some bizarre attempts, they tried to poison his cigar so he'd lose his beard. Because they thought if he lost his beard, he'd be like Samson, he'd lose his power. I read another one where...
Milkshake?
Yeah, they were going to have a submarine come into Havana, the harbor, and fire a flare-up in the sky to try to convince all the Catholics in Cuba that Christ was coming, like his second coming. They all revolt against Castro because he was an antichrist. And all these other really bizarre things that don't really make any sense. But I think the fact is that Castro should not have been able. He should not have been allowed to become leader of Cuba. And America did try some very feeble attempts to get rid of him, Bay of Pigs and what I just mentioned. But he's a symbol of America failing to take the leadership role and get rid of him, do whatever it takes to get rid of a dictator and an evil leader. But he's a symbol of defying America. He's a symbol of American failure. And I think that's why a lot of enemies of America love him, but I think that's why a lot of liberals love him too, is because he epitomizes everything America couldn't do. And a lot of liberals are, I guess... they self-hating Americans, if I can put it that way.
Well, maybe the beard thing worked, because as he got older, that thing just, he didn't really have it anymore.
Yeah.
Tried to keep it going, but it was very thin.
I think that might have been the key, the linchpin to his power. I mean, Stalin had the mustache. Mussolini was the only like clean-shaven dictator. So could be something on there. I don't know.
Who knows? Before we get to Grant's story, just an update on this Ohio State situation. They say the suspect is dead. They apparently killed him. So, or her. I don't know who it is. But that's the latest report out, and I guess about 8 or 9 at the hospital. So there's still details are coming out about that, but and we'll know more as the day goes on, of course. But another active shooter. Reported there at Ohio State, it seems like they have been killed. And they also say that active shooters have skyrocketed, the number of them, since 2008. So I'm not sure why that's the case, but that's what the reports say. So another one of those situations there going on at Ohio State this time. Grant, you've got a story for us today as well, and this kind of is a little bit different than the Castro topic, but it does tie in a way just because of the media. This is from The Intercept. It says, a Washington Post disgracefully promotes a McCarthyite blacklist from a new, hidden, and very shady group. That's quite the title.
Yes, it is. And it's a pretty accurate title, because that's exactly what this group is. They're called Prop or Not. And The Washington Post set them up as these experts with military and technical and economic backgrounds. And yet no one really knows who they are. Meanwhile, they are putting gigantic swaths of media outlets on this Russian propaganda list. They're basically calling every media outlet that has anything critical to say about U.S. foreign policy a Russian propagandist machine, which, I mean, that would include us if they knew us, which they probably don't. But we talk about how U.S. decisions abroad have been horrible for the last 8 years. Does that make us inspired by Russia? I don't think so.
But I'm sure they'll change their tune as soon as Donald Trump gets in. Then they'll say, well, now it is all, you know, backed by Russia, because obviously they're just trying to promote the liberal administration, right? And anybody that would in any way have anything to say against it and against the decisions, they must be influenced by Russia. That's the narrative.
Well, it seems kind of like that, or maybe even anyone who has anything different than maybe a centrist classic Clinton or Bush type view of the world is a propagandist machine. So really, even if it is a so-called conservative in power, if anything is said negatively about U.S. intervention overseas, then it's a Russian outlet, which is crazy, because the Washington Post does not know who is behind this Prop or Not group.
Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, that's very possible, but no one knows their identities. And to set this group up as experts, it really is shocking, especially when they've been talking about fake news so much.
Yeah.
Washington Post, New York Times, a lot of these big outlets have been accusing fake news of being the reason Mr. Trump was elected the president, even though they have become fake news. They clearly were shilling for Hillary Clinton the entire election, and now they have the gall to accuse other news sites as being, what do you call that? I guess Russian propaganda.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. Yeah, it's really interesting, because it's, you know, media always needs their source, right? Who's your source? And so now WikiLeaks has become kind of the one with the scoop. And so I just wonder if this is like a retaliation to that, like, oh, we've got this group too, by the way. Mm-hmm. And they've got information too.
It is kind of like a retaliation of WikiLeaks, because believe it or not, WikiLeaks is on the list of groups. So is Drudge Report, which is, right. I believe, the third largest news website on the entire internet. So
what about Washington Post and the New York Times?
No, they didn't make strangely it. Enough, those websites are not on there.
Well, of course not. No, they wouldn't be on there.
But like the Drudge Report, it gets articles from all over the place, a lot of reputable sources, including the Washington Post and the New York Times.
Well, it's so funny, because he takes a lot of heat, you know, Matt Drudge does, but he doesn't write anything. He just links to other people's stories.
Compiling stories
and
on
just
one site.
So mad at him. But now, obviously, he's careful about what he puts there, and it does push sort of an idea, and I get that. But at the same time, it is just other people's links. And anyone could find him. He just happens to find him and put him up there for you.
Exactly. And as usual, this Washington Post report was scantily researched. It was hardly based in fact, but they found one source that would call all of these other outlets that disagree with them a propagandist outlet or a propagandist machine controlled by Russia. Just because they don't agree with the views of the Washington Post, which has been extremely discredited the last few months.
Yeah, it's a whole... Well, we talked about this during the election cycle, how you have a battle between candidates, but then you had a battle between media outlets, too. And, you know, who's credible, who's not, and I don't know, is anybody credible? It's hard to say. Trumpet, thetrumpet.com.
Well, it does seem interesting. They had the word McCarthyite, or McCarthyite, whatever it is, in the title, and that's, assume, referring to Joseph McCarthy. And it is interesting to think back on that, because he did accuse, he had this list of 50 people who were working for Russia. This is after Alger Hiss was revealed and all those real Russian spies. And he had this fictitious list, he said, of all these people working for the government who were Reds. And he caused a lot of uproar and suspicion and mistrust and everything. But it was all lies. But he was capitalizing on the some of the news stories of the day so he can get more power and everything. And it is interesting to reflect on what's been going on this election season, how you have the media accusing Trump of being a Russian mole, pretty much, like working for Russia. You have other sites along that line, which is very similar to what Joseph McCarthy did back in the 50s, 60s. It all fell apart for McCarthy because lies don't last.
Yeah.
Lies always destroy whoever says them. So it was interesting to see with the media, those who are promoting this, and just that it's not working, because if it's not true, it's not going to come out in the end.
Well, you remember how this all got started. It was because of the hacked emails. And they tried to, the Clinton campaign tried to say, hey, everyone, look over here, by saying, well, Russia must, they probably did it. They probably hacked it. And then Donald Trump said, well, good, I don't care, you know, who did it. It should be out there. And then they're like, oh, what? And that's how it all started.
He's in league with Russia because he said it's good the truth came out.
Right. And so, I mean, who knows who hacked it? Probably wasn't Russia, but even if it was, so what? You, if you were doing good things and Russia hacked it, well, great. Then you'd have your good fruits out there on display. Like, we tried to keep it quiet, but we've been doing a lot of good stuff, which would never happen. But, and so it was just, it's just, whether Russia was involved with that or not, it was kind of just a smoke and mirrors, like, be distracted by that instead of what was revealed, which was breaking the law left, right, and center there on the Clinton campaign. So that's where it all started from. And now we're talking about this other stuff. It's funny.
Those emails are extremely disturbing. More and more keeps coming out about it. A lot of extortion, distortion, breaking of the law. And really what they've done here, what the Clinton campaign and all of their media supporters have done, is make it extremely hard to find the actual truth. Because any site that dares report on what's in WikiLeaks must be in league with Russia, because Russia's the one who supposedly opened up all these emails in the first place. So now we can't believe any of the sites that actually bothered to do research into WikiLeaks, because apparently that was opened up by Russia.
Yeah, it's the classic muddy the waters, you know, so no one can make heads or tails out of what's going on any which place. It is interesting. And both of these headlines today that you guys brought in had new words for me. So I've heard of utopianism, but it's not a common one. And then the McCarthyite. Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of interesting words. Speaking of headlines too, it kind of just shows you how they like to frame their headlines. This one from one of the leaders at the Washington Post, said, Russian propaganda effort helped spread fake news during election. And then it says, say independent researchers.
Right. So very small print.
This is his personal belief backed up by these independent researchers, so-called. No one knows who they are, but they're putting everyone on a Russian propagandist list.
It's probably his family. Like his daughter wrote it, or his
Christmas
mom.
List.
Yeah. Who are these independent researchers, you know?
They're just being set up as experts for no reason. And it's extremely dangerous to do that, because no doubt this Washington Post story was shared probably thousands, maybe millions of times. And now everyone is thinking that all those media outlets on the list are from Russia. You can't believe a word they say.
Yeah, and I mean, that gets back even to that quote that's played in the Trump Daily Radio show from President Reagan, where he was very clear in the beginning about saying, look, you know, I've said some things that are opinion, and you don't have to agree with them, but the media is saying things, in this case about Cuba and Castro, that are opinion. And he made that very clear in the beginning, like, this isn't fact, this is their opinion, and I'm going to tell you the facts about what's going on in Cuba. And so it would be really good for people to have some clarity on, like, this topic as well. Like, okay, you're writing your opinion, we get that, but you don't have any facts. Mm-hmm. And so it's just opinion. But opinion becomes facts, right?
Yeah, and that's the whole question now is, what is truth? Where do you find it? TheTrumpet.com is clearly the best source for that, but then there's also a lot of research that you have to do outside of that. If you're going to go to other websites, you have to see who is rooted in the facts and who is presenting the facts honestly, not trying to slant them toward their particular bias.
Yeah, and I would just guess based upon my own self that a lot of people don't sit there and read the entire write-up because it's long and boring. But the headlines...
Attention spans have been shortened, too, by sites like Twitter where you had to fit into 144 characters.
Right, but the headlines stick.
Yeah.
And you remember those little bites. But pretty interesting stuff going on in the world today. And, of course, a lot more coming up with the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And a Kia David program, all that's on your way. And also a new Music for Life coming up later today on KPCG as well. Check the schedule at kpcg.fm. Have a great rest of your day. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.